This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Nicola Bates. How are you, Nicola?
I'm really well. Thank you for inviting me here.
You are the CEO of WineGB.
Yes, it's a huge privilege.
Yes, WineGB. Do you want to tell us what WineGB is? I think most of our listeners should know, and they've heard your name on the news on our podcast enough already. But tell us what WineGB is.
I hope so. So look, WineGB, we've had a number of changes in the last few years, and we really understand now 100% what we are here for our members and the sector to do, which is to help our members to make wine, market wine, and tell that story. Fundamentally, we're all about making sure the organisation is helping our members to be resilient and take advantage of the opportunities which are out there. Never more important now where the economy is sitting and all the sort of international concerns which people face.
Okay, and WineGP, it's a subscription group, isn't it? So it is an opt-in.
It's opt-in, which is different from an awful lot of wine regions around the world. It means that we have to be constantly compelling and giving good value back to members. It also means that we're constantly thinking about who else can we bring into the organisation to help those members, which is why we have an awful lot of patrons and partners and sponsors who are therefore able to support us financially, but also more importantly, supporting our members with insight and understanding and expertise, which they can then draw on.
And who are the members?
Our members are growers and producers, so about 25% of our members are growers, the rest are all producers. About two-thirds of our membership are making fewer than 10,000 bottles of wine a year, and we have pretty much a good range all across, from the smallest all the way through to the largest producers.
England's got a lot of vineyards and a small number of wineries. My numbers sort of suggest there's something like 1,000 vineyards and about 200-plus wineries. What's your numbers?
Okay, so the most recent numbers came out from Wine Standards a couple of weeks ago, and it's saying 280 wineries, so it's quite a big jump, actually, and 1,100 in terms of vineyards. So the growth in the sector in the last 5-6 years have been absolutely remarkable. If you go back to 2018, it was something like 750 vineyards and about 160 wineries. So that acceleration in terms of production, you also see in terms of sales as well. So it's just a wonderful booming sector. But your audience know this already.
Of the vineyards, did you say 25% of vineyards are members or...?
So, no, we have about 70% of UK hectarage as members, 25% of our membership are growers only. So they're using us for things like our Green Book, which makes sure they have information about plant protections, which are essential for adhering to regulation. They are seeing information like our Harvest Report, that they have access to our free carbon calculator, a whole range of things which are very specifically for growers only. For those producers, they're able to get lots of add-ons in terms of the marketing support and the work which we do there. And everyone is paying into making sure we're telling the story of our sector, the whole tell piece in and around our engagement with people like you in the media, but also government as well to press our case.
Let's talk a wee bit about where you came from, because you're not really a hardcore wine person, I would say, but you have been in the industry sort of for a while. So do you want to just give us a sort of like from childhood to now in a couple of minutes?
It's funny. I mean, I lived in Yorkshire for a number of years when I was a student.
You don't sound like a Yorkshire.
No. And it was very much like if you're not from Yorkshire, you're not born there 2 or 3 generations, then you're not from Yorkshire. With wine, I think it takes a long time to build in and feel that sort of natural affinity or affinity back. I absolutely adore wine and have had a real sort of opportunity to try and taste right across the range over the last few years. So definitely more wine culture and background now than I did when I started working. Oh God, you've asked me from my childhood. So childhood, Plymouth born. My local vineyard is Camel Valley, so the Lido family, which is fantastic. I then went to York University, as referenced, and then my career has followed through from a policy public affairs background. So I spent just under a decade working with trade associations and consultancy, so I'm very used to that sort of stakeholder engagement piece. That was mainly on the infrastructure side, putting in the fundamentals for our economy. I stood in the 2010 general election and used that because I still wanted a political career at that point, and bounced into business. I was on a board of a small independent recruitment firm, which was sort of the leader in its sector, again, just under a decade, and loved it. But I missed the public realm, worked out that I didn't want to go into politics. I mean, I don't know what was happening at the time, Brexit, you know, Boris, all these sorts of things. So looked at how could I be useful and bring my skill set to bear. Ended up at the Portman Group. I managed to sort of sell myself in as a headhunter into the Portman Group, which was odd. And then really enjoyed that. So I was the head of external affairs. I was working with some of the biggest drinks companies in the world, including Diageo and Heineken, AB InBev, working with them to make the case to government about responsible drinking and the work which the industry does to support that, working very closely with things people like Department of Health and Social Care, big conversations in and around labelling, and also had strategy as part of that mix. And then basically I went from gamekeeper to poacher, which is the best way round, and joined WineGB about 2.5 years ago, and it's been a ride.
Portman Group, just for the listeners, we have done podcasts on with them in the past, but a long time ago. They're a lobby group for the entire drinks industry. Again, they're a subscription model as well, isn't it? It's an opt-in.
Yeah, and basically it does a number of things. It was the marketing regulator. So if you have a drinks product and want to make sure it's not going to fall foul of the Portman Group Code of Conduct and therefore potentially be pulled out of shelves, then they have a free service which you can check it through. And then the flip side is making sure that the industry is acting responsibly and engaged in that agenda, which we then engaged with government on. But yes, it was a subscription-based model which worked well.
And which constituency did you... Because it was you tried to become a Conservative MP. So which constituency was it?
Sheffield Hallam. So I was standing against Nick Clegg, which was a blast. I was very excited on election day because I thought I had quite a few votes coming through. And then I saw his votes and realised that there was quite a disparity.
Was he head of the Liberal Democrats at the time?
He was, yes.
Yeah, it's very hard to beat an incumbent leader, isn't it?
Well, it was the sort of the first run. The idea is you do a first run and then you move on to someone which is a little bit more achievable.
Okay.
It was a great experience, and didn't actually get to debate Nick because he was busy wooing the rest of the country.
That's a shame. Maybe you can do it on Facebook. He still does stuff with Facebook, doesn't
just
he?
Just bounced out.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, just recently.
Let's zoom in a bit more about WineGB and the UK wine industry. Do you want to just give us an update on where we are in the UK at the moment? Because we haven't really done a proper catch-up on where the UK is at the moment. You've mentioned sort of the numbers in terms of the number of vineyards and number of producers. But what sort of hectareage? Are we still heavily dominated and sparkling? Jane and I went up to Crouch Valley. They did a trade tasting up there before Christmas. And we tried a lot of quite nice still wines. So tell us what's the state of the UK industry? I'm particularly interested in things like export figures as well.
Yeah, super. So I always like to talk about trends because that gives you a bit more of a sense of where it looks. If we go back to 2018 was our third biggest harvest because we've exceeded it since. So we made 13 million bottles of wine that year. This year we've had our second biggest harvest, which was 16 million-ish. And the one prior to that was 2023, which was a bumper year of about 22 million. So we're starting to get into some strong, stable figures. Even in 2024, which wasn't the strongest year, I think everyone got rained out of any sort of summer activity. We did still something like 12 million bottles. So there's a consistency in our production. That production comes from about 4,500 hectares, give or take. We do about two-thirds sparkling, one-third still. Chardonnay is our strongest grape, with Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier, obviously the sparkling varieties there. And then on the stills, Bacchus is leading the charge there. But gosh, you get some really strong Chardonnays in the UK, and you get these wonderful light Pinot Noirs, which has a huge appeal to an awful lot of the audience which is looking for a lighter wine. So it has that sort of younger demographic pull. A huge part of the demographic drinking our wines are 25 to 45 year olds. They're really buying in and getting it, which is quite different from an awful lot of other wine categories in the world. which perhaps index slightly higher up the age scale, which we see as a positive. So if we're buying into our brands and our products now, then that hopefully is a lifetime journey, especially as you can go along to a vineyard. There's about 300 vineyards with some sort of tourism offer. You can go along there, enjoy it, and then you have that sort of loyalty, affinity to them, their winemakers, their story, which gets people coming back. What other stats would you like to know?
Exports,
yes. So exports have gone up quite a lot. Back to 2021, we're about 4% of our sales were through export. Last year it was 9% of sales. We had 35% growth in terms of export sales within a year. We have an ambition that by 2030 we should have about 15% of our sales being through export, and we're playing a pivotal role in that. So we have about 25, 30 producers who are really going guns out for export. Collectively, we've measured it and we think we're spending, as a category, not a brand, as a category, about £1 million a year in terms of our export marketing spend and engagement. Unfortunately, Department of Business and Trade is probably putting about 2p on the pound there, something which we're really trying to push. The export work which we do ranges from being at VinParis. So we were at VinParis this year with our largest ever activation at an exhibition. We had 16 producers. We were at in Brussels, the Netherlands, just last week, working with the embassies. We have really good trade relationships with the embassies, where we're able to bring people in and they're able to taste. They were new markets for us, and there was a good sort of appetite and interest. We're strong in Japan, we're strong in America, Canada is a really good opportunity for us, and obviously the Scandies, where the monopolies mean they buy through the line. So our top 10 markets probably capture all of those which I've just spoken through. We'll get to about 1 million bottles to export probably in the next 18 months, 2 years, which I think is a strong sort of moment of us being able to look at the impact we're having. What is remarkable is just the level of international interest that is in our wines at export. And it comes from the fact we're on trend, the quality is there. We have something called the Golden 50, which is our capture of all the awards which English wine producers win, not just in the UK, but internationally as well. And, you know, we have over 100 to choose from who have won gold medals. And when you're winning at IWSE, as Nye Timber did, taking home the main prize, that's a really good statement. And it's a halo effect for the whole industry. So even if we have producers who don't put in for awards, either through us or through other areas, we're able to show that the whole of the category has that capability, and it is the quality that people really want from an aspiring wine region.
Okay. Yeah, interesting, you talk about being on trend, and there is a move away from reds to whites and to sparkling wines as well. So that's quite good. But around the world, there's a contraction in terms of total spend on wine and total consumption of wine as well, with figures dropping, you know, 1 or 2% every year, it seems. Are you seeing that? Because the UK seems to be growing in terms of numbers, but you're growing into a retrenching market.
Yeah, look, it's the hardest thing to do at the moment, I think, for anyone to grow. Last time we did our industry survey, and our results should be out for the next one fairly soon, we saw 3% growth of sales, which, having spent time with the Australians and New Zealanders and Californians just a couple of weeks ago in Brussels for the World Wine Trade Group, they would bite our hands off for those sorts of figures, because it was quite a depressing room of downward trends. For us, though, we look at that in comparison to the huge acceleration we've had over the last number of years. And the real effects of the economy, the lack of people going into restaurants and bars, is seen. So the year before that, we were on about 10% growth. And prior to that, you know, we had something like 175% growth over about 5 years, which was a remarkable sort of jump. We are working hard to help our members to get to that next step up, that next sea change in terms of marketing, which is absolutely essential. But it doesn't help when you look at the international environment and what's happening in Iran. People are very price conscious. We're a prestige product, and therefore being able to highlight our wines both to consumers and also the trade is critical, really. But we would be confident in a really happy economy that we would be flying again. We look back a few years ago, the economy was decent, we were flying. If we can get back to a decent economy, all the fundamentals about our wines are right. We're local, we're sustainable, we have the quality. We think we can get into that space, but it is tricky. When we're thinking about consumers, yes, they are drinking less, but they are also spending more and buying better. And thinking about that youth demographic, we do have more of a capture of that because they're excited by the fact we're new and we're interesting and we're local and we're sustainable. And therefore, we see that as a huge opportunity for us, potentially against some of those other more established categories.
One of the concerns I have, and I've always had this concern, I think everybody has, I remember thinking this during the London Olympics. When was that? That was about 2012, yeah. I remember about 2 years, 3 years before the London Olympics, there'd been a big planting boom, and all the grapes that were coming on stream were going to be coming on stream around the London Olympics. And people were going, oh, oversupply problems. And that's never really gone away. And if you look at some of the markets around the world at the moment, Bordeaux's got cellars full of wine. In New Zealand, they're not harvesting a lot of grapes. California, they're not harvesting a lot of grapes as well. And in the UK, with the economy, not the economy, but the economies of scale and the economies of making wine in the UK, it's hard to make a profit in the UK. I know there's some players, a lot of the players are private, so you don't really get to see their numbers, but some of the more public ones you see and you go, oh, they're struggling a lot. So there's a lot of growth. Is there much profitability?
Anyone who's in this trade knows that you're thinking about the next generation. And if you look at the costs inherent in a new sector, they're really at play in the UK. So we are still seeking distribution. So we don't have established distribution routes, so that's cost there. We're having to market an entirely new category, both to the trade, without any government support, and through our members themselves. Our labour costs are relatively high. Startup costs are relatively high. Getting capital for that is difficult. We don't have grants for wineries. We have very limited support in terms of viticulture. We have the highest duty rates in the world for a domestic market. On every single count, we have a high cost. So it's not a surprise that when you're trying to set up with those conditions, that it's hard to make a margin from the beginning. We, as WineGB, are here to make sure that people can get the strongest yields. And that, of course, on yields, we're making sort of a third less than you would do in France, maybe half of what you would do in Spain. So we're trying to make sure that the knowledge, the expertise, the R&D, which is out there, is being passed through to our members. So they're in the strongest position to get the highest yield, which is possible, the strongest quality for all their products, so that they're in a better place to be able to have a stronger sustainability of business model. It takes time. There are businesses out there who are doing really well in terms of profits. There are others who are looking at the situation now and then thinking, well, how do we make this work? What do we need to do and future-proof for the sector? It is the reality of a maturing sector. Every industry will go through various different phases of opportunity. If it went up in a beautiful upward curve, then that would be perfect, but it never does. So the ups and downs take a bit of time to work through, but that's what you expect when we're at this stage of our journey.
We're going to finish up in a minute, this interview in a minute, but I just got a question about tourism. You mentioned tourism, and when I first started in the wine trade 25 years ago, one of our biggest markets was doing hen parties. We used to run hundreds and hundreds of wine tastings for hens. Nowadays, they're all going to bloody vineyards, so that part of our business is nowhere near as busy as it was. You mentioned tourism, and certainly tourism is a great way to get margin for a winery. I was reading somewhere, tourism is a major push for you guys in terms of improving profitability in the vineyard. But really, is tourism a sustainable growth? Because it's only really targeting a certain number of people. You know, when we were doing our hen parties, there was a market for that. There was a certain number of people doing it. When the winery started doing their tourism, they all went there, but that market vanished. But there's no growth in numbers, what I'm getting to. Is there a growth in tourism, and where's that tourism coming from? Because wine tourism is great for profitability, but it's not necessarily going to scale as the UK wine industry scales.
Beautiful question.
The poorly asked question, if you ask me.
You know, I love the tourism component. Not all of our members have tourism as part of their offer. We are really concerned to make sure that actually the peaks and troughs which we were talking about can be levelled out a bit, and actually having some tourism offer can really help, whether that's having tours, whether it's simply tasting, whether it's going and enjoying their cellar door and being able to pick up a bottle, all the way through to the food piece. There's opportunity there, and then you are sort of diversifying your offer, which I think helps. There are 300 businesses, as I've mentioned before, who have a tourism offering, and we would like to see that grow. The number of tourists have gone from about 1 million a couple of years ago to 1.5 million now. We have asked our members about employment growth. The vast majority are going to grow their employment in the next few years, and in that, vast majority of it are looking at it from the tourism service perspective. So people see the value. For us, helping the tourism offering is key. So we do a number of things. One is we run the English Wine Week campaign that is being adopted right across the sector, and they use it as a way of generating people to come in. We'll be doing some fun activations in the next few months around English Wine Week. So when it lands, it lands. We also have our awards, and for the first time ever this year, we are going to be having a small cellar door and a wine cellar door award, so we're able to do more spotlighting. But the piece for us is what can we do as an association which is different. We are trying to get the government to understand that a way of supporting the sector is through that tourism offer. I mentioned duty and the fact that it's the highest in the world, bar Finland. If the government was able to do some targeted support, one of the ways of doing that is through the cellar door, and we're calling for a wine tourism relief. What would that mean? If you are selling up to 50,000 bottles, the first 50,000 bottles which you're selling at the vineyard or the winery will be net negative duty. So that means you as a producer are able to put that money into savings and do what you want with it, whether that is about building out your cellar door, whether that's about insuring your risks, whether that's about employing more people. You are then in position to have an investment opportunity which doesn't currently exist. So we're pushing hard for that. We'll be doing an awful lot of work in the budget this year. We have a really strong proposal, because actually we think that could be a real investment, an injection of opportunity, or money, quite frankly, for our members, in order to be able to help them to grow the whole of the rest of the business. And of course, from a tourism perspective, you're talking rural jobs, high quality, you're talking investment in from people who are either local to the UK, but also international visitors. We worked with Visit England for a study they did a couple of years ago. They discovered that 43% of inbound visitors would be really interested in going to a vineyard. That works out to be 16 million visitors, which is a big chunk of market into our space, and we're really going after it quite hard. And we see it from our export markets. Those people who are seeing our wines in export are often coming here and visiting as well. So the growth isn't just domestic, it's actually international, and we can play a really nice role for people who are coming to the UK. It's not just old in terms of London or York or wherever. It's also about doing something new and different in a space which they wouldn't expect, which is what we as the English and Welsh wine community and Scottish can deliver.
All right then, Nicola, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.